Funny how that worked. They pushed for me to go there, and I could have sworn that they wished they could take it all back, whether it was because I was the youngest and would be out of the house soon, or because they realized how steep the tuition was. I wasn't sure. They never outright said anything other than they were happy for me. Nevertheless, uneasiness rested in the things we didn't say, and they weren't saying anything at all, ever. Not to me, and not to each other. The only time they seemed to interact was when we were in social settings like these.
So, yeah, if I joined any, it would be the Coast Guard,
Corrigan said. I shot him a look. You're still talking about this?
You tuned me out, didn't you?
Sorry. There's only so much armed forces talk I can handle, especially with my brother flying jets over enemy territory. I took a sip of my punch. Maybe we should raid the alcohol cabinet.
Let's go.
We walked inside and went downstairs to the basement, where Alistair kept the good stuff. Not that we knew what good stuff was. We always went for the vodka, rum, or tequila without a second glance at the label.
So you and Ro are over,
Corrigan commented as he poured vodka into our punch glasses. Did we ever really begin? He looked up without fully turning his face toward me.
Don't undermine me.
I'm not. I took the glass he handed me and clinked it against his in a toast. I just wouldn't exactly call what we were doing a relationship or even a hookup. Maybe a casual messing around. I was lying through my teeth, and I was sure Corrigan knew it. There was nothing casual about Ro and me, especially right before he ended things. We'd been inseparable, just not important enough for him not to break up with me because he was leaving. I tried to contain the pain in my chest when I thought about it. His breakup had been methodical, simple, and clean. The way skilled surgeons cut through skin. I'd been expecting it, so I'd handled it okay. I smiled up at Cor as we went upstairs.
You'd call finally taking your relationship with quite arguably your best friend a casual hookup,
Cor said. I blinked at him. What would you call it?
Love.
Love? Are you insane? I spit some of my drink back into my cup because I didn't want to spray the furniture.
Right. I forgot you two have sworn off love.
He shook his head, eyes rolling.
You're both full of shit.
Maybe I was full of shit, but Rowan wasn't. He genuinely didn't believe in love, and I didn't want to be the girl who fell in love with the guy unwilling to reciprocate it. So yeah, maybe I was full of shit, but I was also doing the best I could to guard my own heart from it all, and with good reason. Because we don't believe in love.
Because you don't believe you're in love.
We aren't.
He asked you to go to Columbia for him.
Yet I'm going to Yale.
Why is that?
We walked back outside and joined the party again. It wasn't much of a party. There was no loud music or drunken people jumping in the pool, not like the real parties we'd had when there weren't any parents around. As Rowan liked to say, it was an adult classy party. My heart hurt a little when I thought about all the things he liked to say, and it hurt a little more when I thought of all the things he refused to say. Yale has always been my dream. If he really wanted to be with me, if he really wanted to... whatever, he would have gone to my first choice school.
He got a scholarship.
An athletic scholarship, I corrected. He could have applied to Yale.
He did.
Oh, I wasn't aware. I deflated a little. Why had Rowan never told me that he'd applied?
Bet you never asked.
I hadn't asked. I'd just assumed Rowan was trying to be Rowan and get his way by making me apply to his college of choice instead of him applying to mine. The realization made my heart sink a little. Would he have gone if he'd been accepted? Would I have switched knowing he'd at least tried? I shook the thoughts away. It was too late for the answers to matter. I'd never ask him to give up rowing for me. He shouldn't ask me to give up Yale for him. We stood there in silence. Sam joined us shortly after.
You spiked your drinks?
he asked, standing in front of us. Corrigan and I lifted our glasses and smiled. Sam shook his head.
Bastards. You're still set on the tech college?
Cor asked Sam.
Dude, you ask me this every time you see me, Sam said. And you literally see me every fucking day.
Hey, someone needs to care,
Corrigan said.
Bet your parents don't ask.
Sam chuckled.
Damn straight.
He went on to talk about his classes. Again, not that I minded. He loved it, and it was as if something sparked to life inside him when he talked about the creative aspect of it all. I loved hearing it, because I was going to Yale to study the same thing. The only difference was a mortgage-size loan. No biggie. I broke away from the conversation to get myself an hors d'oeuvre, and almost turned right back around when I spotted a dark blue dress from the corner of my eye. I hoped Mildred wasn't coming over to talk to me. It wasn't that I didn't like her. It was that we had virtually nothing in common. Mildred was rock hard in every possible way, cold, calculating, and so unlike my mother, who was soft and emotional. Maybe too emotional at times. To be honest, it was a wonder how Dad had put up with her for this long. But who was I to judge? I smelled Mildred's staple Chanel perfume as she approached, and I lowered the small spinach quiche from my mouth before I took a bite.
You look lovely today, she commented.
As do you, I smiled. Are you ready to have the house to yourself again? No more rampant rowers messing up your furniture?
I'm conflicted about it, she said.
My brows shot up. She never, ever said things like that. But then, Rowan was her favorite, and unlike most mothers, Mildred unabashedly played favorites. We both tore our gazes away from each other's at the same time, looking out to the party. I followed the loud laughter I heard, the one that made my heart skip a beat, and looked at Rowan, who was talking to Cameron.
I wanted to thank you, Mildred said beside me.
I looked at her again. She was watching Rowan.
For not going to Columbia.
Oh, my heart thundered. I'm surprised you even know about that.
Oh, you know, I've heard the guys talking here and there.
She glanced at me, her eyes showing no sign of emotion.
You would have ruined his life, and your own.
How so?
You aren't a good fit for Rowan, dear. You're plain and childish, and quite frankly, I don't understand what my son sees in you.
Her tone was so thick with feigned regret, I was surprised she didn't choke on it.
He belongs with that girl, someone who will make him see the bigger picture, who will explore the world with him and build the company up, not tear it down or settle for some cutesy little family.
I felt myself clam up at her words. This woman had welcomed me into her house with open arms. She'd smiled at me and asked how I was doing. She'd pretended to care about my family and me. How could she say those things? I willed the tears to stop building in my eyes. I couldn't give her the satisfaction of seeing she'd gotten to me. I tried to remind myself of what a royal bitch she was to her own sons. But it wasn't much help. The ache of her words was still there, sitting in my chest. Instead, I made myself look at Rowan and Cameron again. They'd never been a couple, but they'd always managed to look like one.
Maybe it was their Greek god and goddess good looks, both tall and effortlessly classic.
Something akin to jealousy wedged its way inside my chest. I found it increasingly difficult to breathe as I watched them, but I couldn't tear my gaze away. Just the other day, we'd kissed. Just the other day, he'd looked at me as if I were his world. Just the other day, his fingers were inside me. My mouth was on him until he climaxed. Just the other day, he broke things off, saying a long distance, whatever this was, would never work. I'd agreed. He was right, of course. I'd been understanding and kissed him feverishly and then walked away, wondering if he wanted me to fight. But I didn't want to fight or be fought for. Mildred walked away from me without another word. Whether it was because she saw that I couldn't summon my own response, or because she got bored, I wasn't sure. I didn't care. Sam and Cor joined me again.
That was harsh, Corrigan said.
I am so sorry, Sam added. Not your fault, I shrugged, not having realized they were listening and also not willing to show just how much I was dying inside. Perhaps she's right anyway. Neither one of them agreed or disagreed. It was the thing I hated about having male friends. Women would stand by you. They'd be mad with you, sad with you, stomp the ground for you, and curse the world for you. Men just stood there helplessly. It annoyed me. I set my glass down, threw away the quiche I no longer wanted, and said goodbye to them. I was halfway to the sidewalk when I heard someone running behind me and turned around. My heart spiked at the sight of Rowan in his slacks, button-down shirt and tie. He ran a hand through his hair and stopped in front of me.
I leave at 6 in the morning.
I know,
I swallowed. You aren't gonna say goodbye?
We already said goodbye a few weeks ago, did we not? I said. Besides, you were busy with your girlfriend. A flash of something claimed his features. Regret? Panic? Just like inside, I refused to let the hurt rise to my features.
She isn't my girlfriend, he said.
Stupid, idiotic excuse. He belongs with that girl. Tears burned in my eyes. Hot, stupid, annoying tears. I blinked them away quickly. No one is, I whispered. You don't bleed. His eyes flashed when I said this. He'd thought I'd forgotten. He thought that because we were high when he told me that whole bit about his father and the way he made him continuously repeat that mantra that I could ever forget it. But how could I? It was terrifying and sad and everything wrong with the world. And it was something he'd been taught since he was a kid.
I don't,
he confirmed. I know. He cupped my face, and for maybe the last time, he looked at me as if I were the world. Like I was the sun, and he was locked in my orbit. He opened his mouth to say something and closed it again. Came closer still, lowered his face to mine and kissed me. It was a soft kiss filled with regret and goodbyes, and when I walked away from him that time, I felt my heart crack open a little. I told myself I didn't bleed either, but I was wrong.
Chapter 33 Rowan Present For as long as I could remember, I'd hated my father. But I'd never hated him more than that very moment. I sat in his office with Cameron beside me and our lawyer beside her, listening to their points as to why she'd be perfect for the contractual wife role. They had good points, I'd give them that. The reason the meeting was taking longer than usual was because I'd spent a full hour arguing the point. Cameron just stood there, stoic, letting me say awful things about her without a care in the world, showing me why she was truly cut out for this role. I fought it as much as I could. I said that I would never in a million years marry a selfish, bratty, mean girl. Cameron laughed at the last bit, her green eyes sliding to mine with humor and absolutely no shame. You don't have to be in love with me. Have you not been paying attention? This isn't about love or selflessness. That shut me up. I sat there and listened the rest of the time. We were both incapable of loving people the way they wanted to be loved, and we knew that. I listened as the lawyer lectured her about the possibility of signing the marriage contract and what it entailed. She nodded and listened intently, asking questions every so often. How much money would she get at the end of all of it? What if she wanted to end the marriage? Could we add a no-children clause in the contract? Questions that made it clear she really was perfect for this role. She didn't want involvement. She wanted money. She wanted to keep her independence, probably screw around with the Wall Street guy, and be able to travel while cashing her check for being married to me. I couldn't blame her for not wanting a real marriage. I didn't either. You have to be sure about this, Cameron. Dad said in his warm tone that held a hint of warning. The idea's for you to be married. Forever. But if divorce is something you're dead set on from the start, I have to warn you that you won't be able to get out of this for at least a few years. She put her hand on mine over my knee. What should have been a comforting gesture felt like claws sinking into my skin. I calmly took her hand, set it on the armrest, and leaned forward, taking a set of papers from my father's desk. I'm okay with that, she said with a casual shrug. I mean, that's all marriage is anyway, right? A contract? For some people, it can be more than that. My eyes rose to meet my father's. I glared. Let's stick to the contracts. Very well. The lawyer continued to explain everything, and each word felt like another cement block dragging me deeper into a bottomless lake. Sweat broke out across my brow, down my spine, and I reached up and wiped my forehead. It wasn't a good adrenaline, not like when I was about to start a rowing meet. I wasn't sure what this was. It was something I definitely hadn't felt before. I was comfortable enough with Cameron. I'd known her since we were in diapers. Sure, when we were in public, she could sometimes be a little much with the displays of affection, but in private, she was just an insecure girl trying to navigate her way through life. If it's okay, I'd like to have my lawyer look at these before I sign, she said. We all agreed. The lawyer put copies in a folder and gave them to her, explaining that it was also imperative she understand the clauses in the prenuptial and noted things she wanted added before we proceeded. She said her goodbyes, stood, and left. The lawyer followed. Then it was only my father and I sitting in a cold office. You're sure about this, Dad said. You haven't given me much of a choice. You have a choice in whom you marry, he said. It doesn't have to be all business. And that was why you brought Cameron in? Because I have a choice? I asked dryly. He sighed heavily. That isn't fair, Rowan. You want to be the head of a company. You want to make the big decisions and drive it forward. This is what needs to be done. Cameron is a good candidate because she knows what's expected. And look, she wants a 3 to 4 year contract, which furthermore shows you that she's only in this for the business aspect of it. Once it's done, you can have a shot at something real. I hope you find that someday. I shook my head, looking away from him. I'd grown up with 2 emotionless parents who didn't give a shit about me and my brother's feelings. You never gave a shit before, I said. We don't bleed, remember? I'm trying here, Rowan. He exhaled heavily, shutting his eyes. I've made a lot of mistakes. Mariah, I stood, done with this conversation, and reached the door before turning around and looking at him. Maybe you should teach your other kid the mistakes you've made. It's rather late to repair the damage you caused to Sam and me. With that, I walked back to my office. I opened the door and took a nice, deep breath at the sight of Tessa. She glanced up quickly and went right back to her phone call and computer screen, but not before I saw the flash of agony in her expression. I sat behind my desk and alternated between staring at the back of her head and closing my eyes to listen to the sound of her voice, which was light and bubbly when she spoke to the account managers in Europe. The genuine laughter she shared with them had the crushing weight on my chest lifting a bit. Eventually I managed to type out an email, and as soon as I hit send, my eyes found the back of her head again. The long, soft brown curls I'd been running my fingers through last night. I wanted to get up and run my fingers through them again, feel the lightness. I wanted to drag my lips down her neck and body. I wanted to make her feel this unsettling feeling I was harboring for her, for my situation. My father could even go as far as making the claim that he didn't want me to end up like him, but it was too late. I was exactly like him. I was selfish and driven by success, and I would marry a woman like Cameron, one that wouldn't hold me back with feelings, in order to get it. I knew that whatever it was I felt for Tessa, I could never feel for Cameron.
Chapter 34. Tessa. I ignored him all day. When he asked if I wanted to get lunch, I merely shrugged. I couldn't bring myself to conjure words that didn't include colorful language, and I knew that once I spoke, I'd start to cry, which was something I did not want to do in the office. The sight of Cameron there, her comment about the wedding dress, the long meeting between her, Rowan, and Alistair about the contract, it was too much. The entire time they were locked in that office, I had an incessant burning feeling in my esophagus. Around 3:30, when he was on a call with a factory, I scribbled a note that read, "Good luck and congratulations. I'm finished with the job, so you won't have to pick me up for work tomorrow." And then I walked out of the building and climbed into the Uber with tears in my eyes. I stopped by the art gallery and signed off on the papers for Freddie. It was all a blur. I was the worst person he could have sent to sign those papers, because I could have sold his soul to the devil and not known it. It was 5 o'clock by the time I took another Uber home, still in a daze. When I reached my house, the for sale sign, which had been there for days, made me cry harder, and lastly, the sight of the beat-up old truck in my driveway made me cry even more. I wiped my face as I reached Rowan, who was standing by the front door with his hands in his pockets. "I drove it over myself. I wanted to make sure." He stopped talking, his brows pinching when he took in my state. He ran down the steps and reached me. "What happened? What's wrong?"
"Nothing."
I shook my head, swallowing past the large lump in my throat. Tears swarmed again. I shook my head once more and blinked.
"God, I think you were right. I really am afraid of change."
My voice came out whispered and hoarse, and when he wrapped his arms around me, I started crying into his shirt.
"Oh, Tessa,"
he said, running his fingers through my hair soothingly, which only made me cry harder. He held me tighter, as if he were afraid of letting me go. Once I calmed down, he put his lips to my forehead and told me to open the door so we could go inside.
"I have to go get my car," he said. "I left it parked at the shop."
"I'll take you."
"No."
He walked into the kitchen and left me standing in the foyer. I followed him when I heard the cabinets open and close, open and close.
"You don't have tea?"
"I hate tea."
"Well, I'm going to go get you some tea. You should go upstairs and draw a bath. It'll help you calm down."
"I don't need to calm down."
Tears sprung to my eyes again. God, I was being insane.
"What is wrong with me?"
"Change is wrong with you."
He gave me a small, lopsided smile. I covered my face and cried into my hands. I'd miss his smile so much.
"I don't want you to marry her,"
I said. "That's what this is about?"
I nodded as I wiped my tears and sniffled.
"Just everything, but that's part of it. I don't want you to marry her. Not her."
"Why not?"
He walked over, searching my eyes as he waited for me to speak. For a moment, I wondered how much of what I wanted to say would change his mind. I wondered how much weight my thoughts had at all. Could I change his mind? Would he let me? Would he consider asking me instead of her? Probably not. Maybe it was me. Maybe he didn't want to marry me at all, even under fake circumstances. I thought about Celia and her warning. I'd be stuck here forever. My heart stopped for a moment as I considered that. No, God, no, I couldn't do that. I had goals and dreams that were taking me far away from here. Yes, staying would require less change than my goals. It sounded less scary than moving to Paris or even New York. I swallowed all the words I thought about saying. "She's an awful human being," I said instead. His expression softened as he reached me, cupping my face with his hand. He looked at me like I mattered, like I was the only one. In that moment, I forgot how to breathe. I considered going for it, telling him how I really felt, telling him I'd do it, that I'd marry him if all he needed was a stupid contract. I opened my mouth to say it, but couldn't seem to get the words out. He lowered his face and pressed his lips on mine. It was a gentle kiss that spoke of longing and left me bereft when it ended. He looked at me for a long moment, still holding my cheek in his large hand.
"I'm sorry she bothers you."
His flippancy made my jaw clench.
"You're sorry she bothers me? Are you kidding? You're really going to fucking marry her, aren't you?"
"It's only a contract."
White, hot rage swelled inside me. I yanked his hand from my face and took a step back.
"This is going to ruin your life," he shrugged.
"It's just business."
"She said something about seeing my wedding dress designs. That isn't just business."
His jaw ticked. There was a sudden change in his expression.
"When did she say this?"
"Today at the office. She was all smug about it."
My voice lowered to a near mutter, but the rage didn't disappear as I pictured her stupid face and her stupid smile and her stupid words.
"I hate her."
"Tess."
He sighed heavily.
"Don't test me. This isn't high school."
I walked to the cupboard and pulled out a glass, unscrewing the bottle I'd corked the other night, and served myself a glass. It was one of the better red wines from the chateau. Thinking about that place brought another wave of anger. My mother leaving my father and going to live with a man-child. Fucking ridiculous. The entire universe was playing a seriously sick prank on me. I focused on Cameron and continued my rant. "She's such a bitch. Like, seriously, why would you ever marry her? She's a viper and a disgusting excuse for a human being, and she's going to make you more miserable than you already are." I gulped the wine and looked over at him. He looked completely amused, with his arms crossed and his brows raised.
"You done insulting her?"
I set my glass down with a loud clink.
"Oh, fuck you."
I walked out of the kitchen and stomped up to my room. I couldn't understand why he didn't see it. She was terrible for him, just a contract or not. She wanted to wear my dress design. She wanted to... Oh my God, I felt sick. He was really going to marry her. Rowan Hawthorne was going to marry another woman, and there wasn't a thing I could do about it. The reality of the situation shook a new wave of emotions into me. I went over to the little bench by the window, the one I'd sat on countless nights when I felt lost and afraid. I slid my shoes off, brought my legs up, and wrapped my arms around them, placing my chin on my knees. Maybe he'd go get his stupid car and leave me alone. Maybe I would draw a bath and drink the rest of that wine and call it a night. I'd pack tomorrow, leave the next day, and never look back. I'd be in New York on Monday, in Paris by Wednesday. I'd let him get married and live happily ever after with that stupid gold-digging whore. I jolted a little when he sat by my feet, offering me a new glass of wine. I took it and sipped. "I don't want you to marry her." My gaze found his. I fought the tears.
"I know."
"But you're going to anyway."
"What do you suggest I do, Tessa?"
I shrugged, biting my lip to keep from shouting, "Marry me." I wouldn't say it, but from the way his eyes widened, I felt like he could read them on my face anyway.
"I would never ask you to stay."
"I know."
I hated that about him, hated that he wouldn't ask.
"Because you're scared."
His eyes flashed. He took a sip of wine and merely nodded. Shock shot through me. He was scared. I'd been right all along. We were both scared. I reminded myself of that, I didn't want to give up my goals and dreams, but he understood where I stood on that. He'd never stop me from chasing them. This wasn't high school or college. I wasn't afraid to stay and fight his demons with him, like I was back then when I didn't follow him to Columbia. I had my own hurdles to get over. Maybe we could do it together. I licked my lips. We can be scared together, I whispered.
Absolutely not.
His voice was firm, leaving little wiggle room for an argument, but I pushed. I'm not ready to let go.
You have to.
I can't.
Your wings aren't clipped, and I won't be the reason you start thinking you can't fly,
he whispered, coming closer, his wine-infused breath mingling with mine.
You can fly, you know.
I know I can. I want to fly with you.
You aren't a duck.
I smiled despite myself. Bastard. I hated that he made me smile in times like these. I can be.
You're too beautiful to be a duck.
He kissed the tip of my nose. Right, but not too beautiful to not be a fairy.
With beautiful magic,
he answered. My heart pounded. I didn't like this. I couldn't handle this. I looked away and he kissed my cheek, my jaw.
Magic that pulls me under. My little sprite with the beautiful golden skin and the amazing dark eyes that could convince a man of anything.
Stop, I whispered. He didn't stop. He took our wine glasses and set them aside. He undressed me in silence, pressing his lips on my chest with each button he undid. Each kiss filled me with an insatiable longing that threatened to rip me apart.
You're so beautiful, Tessa.
He breathed the words, peeling off my skirt, my underwear, unclasping my bra as he sucked my neck, as he let the straps fall from my shoulders.
He brought his calloused thumbs and dragged them against my nipples in a motion I felt straight between my legs.
I threw my head back and whispered his name. His mouth came up to my ear, promises falling from his lips.
I'm going to make you scream that tonight.
My heart jackhammered as I undressed him, my fingers not moving fast enough on the buttons of his shirt. He shushed me and put his hands over mine, helping me undo the buttons. My gaze came up to meet his, breath hitching at the expression he had on his face. I stopped unbuttoning. I couldn't do this. I couldn't go through with this. Not tonight. Not like this. Not with him looking at me like that.
What's on your mind, baby?
He whispered against my lips before kissing me. I softened against him, continued working buttons free as his tongue worked on mine. What's on yours? I countered when I came up for air. I threaded our fingers together and held our hands at our sides, leaning in to place my lips against the center of his chest and drop kisses over his ridged stomach. My tongue peeked out and licked one side of that sensual deep V that sloped from his hips and disappeared toward my destination. I wasted no time undoing his belt and pulling his pants and briefs down to reveal his proud, thick length. My breath hitched, my insides contracting with memories of it inside me. Without another thought, I took him into my mouth, swirled my tongue around him, moaned around him as his fingers dug into my hair. He wrapped a handful of hair around his hand and pulled me away, bringing me up so I was eye level to his throat before lowering his lips to mine. I felt the kiss down to my marrow. It was slow and sensual, deep and amorous. Things I'd never felt, never imagined feeling in my lifetime. His hand explored my body, my breasts, the slope of my hips, caressed my inner thighs until it found my core. His fingers were slow, his strokes meaningful against my slippery desire. With each touch, he made me feel everything. I felt exposed and raw, delicate. When he laid me down on my back and looked at me, his hands running over me softly, as if I were something to be cherished, his gaze unblinking from mine, as if I were special, I felt I might just break. He lowered his lips to mine again, captured my emotion in his mouth as he parted my legs and thrust into me. It was a deep, merciless thrust that took my breath with it. This wasn't fucking. It wasn't what we'd done before. It didn't feel casual or like something we'd walk away from unscathed. It was daunting and intimidating. A tangled mess of want and need and all the unspoken words weighing heavy between us. My bones rattled with the awareness of him and the pleasure coursing through me.
"I do not bleed,"
he whispered against me. A reminder not to lose himself, I was sure. I told myself the same thing, but I didn't feel it, didn't believe it. He opened his eyes and looked at me before saying it again. I panted, wanting to call his bluff, but couldn't bring myself to humiliate him like that. Couldn't bring myself to point out that neither of us would be the same after this. Chapter 35. Tessa. He was gone the following morning, which didn't surprise me in the least. What was surprising was the gaping hole my chest suddenly had in it. By 12 o'clock, when I realized he wasn't outside by the canoes, or coming back, or even going to call, I packed my bag for New York. My interview wasn't for another 2 days, but I could definitely do with some fresh air and some halal guys. Anything to get away from the memory of Rowan and the way I felt without him. This was exactly what I told myself I did not want. I did not want to be the girl who made decisions because of some man. I wanted to be free of those things. Otherwise, I would have followed him to college. My chest hurt when I thought about that. Following him to college hadn't been the answer. I knew that. But a part of me wondered how different things would have been. Would we still be together? Would we have moved back home and started a family instead of where we ended up? Him taking over his family's company, and me going away for an apprenticeship. Sulking and digging into the past were stupid notions that offered no real solutions. That was what I told myself during the 3-hour car ride to New York. But then, I'd look out the window and saw things that reminded me of the short road trip I'd taken with Rowan, and I felt like crying. I decided I'd done too much crying yesterday, and wiped the tear away before taking a breath, keeping my eyes on the road ahead. To pass the time, I made a mental checklist of all the things I hated about Rowan. He's a control freak. He thinks he's always right. He always has to get the last word. His smile has gotten him further in the world than I ever could go without showing some skin. I'd seen that smile get him out of a traffic ticket on more than one occasion. Something that would never happen to me unless I was wearing a revealing top. He had the body of a god, and I wasn't just saying that because I was in lust with him. He really looked as if he'd been etched by Auguste Rodin himself. He went around in circles until he could convince you to say yes. He had bedroom eyes and used them to his favor. His workspace was meticulous, and who the hell used a Rolodex anymore? He had a way of looking amused by things that weren't the least bit amusing. By the time I pulled up to the hotel, I'd come up with at least 20 things I did not like about Rowan. There were so many items on that list that I knew I didn't have to even start on a list of things I did like. My phone buzzed just as I closed the door to my room, and I hated myself a little for the way I scrambled to pull the phone from my purse. When I saw that it was my grandmother calling, disappointment filtered through me. We spoke for a couple of minutes and hung up. I thought about going to bed, sulking the rest of the night, and then I remembered I'd made a few contacts during my trip with Rowan. On a whim, I decided to email Cody, the buyer from Barney's I'd met at the cocktail party with Rowan. He replied instantly, asking if I was free for dinner, and once we'd set it up, I took a quick shower and headed out. By 7, Rowan still hadn't called, and I was sure he wouldn't. I was so angry with him that I turned off my phone the moment I spotted Cody waiting for me at the restaurant. I walked over with a smile and sat across from him. He was dressed impeccably, in a navy suit with a checkered shirt and a tie that I would have never in a million years paired with it, but it looked perfect on him. I said as much, which made him laugh.
"When you work in fashion, you learn to step your game up," he said. "What about you? Have you started your apprenticeship?"
"That's actually what I am here for. I have my interview tomorrow."
"Are you nervous, excited, ready to get it over with?"
I laughed. "All three, actually." We ordered our food and drinks and went back to our casual conversation. He told me how he chooses what goes into the store, and how they have another set of people stage the products, making it seem as if a customer absolutely needs to buy it. It was intriguing, especially since I'd only spoken to fabric people up until that point. Sure, I knew there was more to the fashion and design world, but I hadn't realized how extensive it was. We finished eating and continued drinking, and all of the anxiety from earlier vanished. I was no longer only thinking about Rowan and how much I missed him. I was actively listening to someone else talk about their job and found that I enjoyed it.
"Your boyfriend didn't come with you this time."
"You mean Rowan?" I put my glass of wine down and looked up in surprise. He isn't my boyfriend."
"Oh, I got a vibe."
"Wrong vibe." I tried to laugh it off, but it sounded weak and uncertain.
"I figured with the way he was looking at you and the way you two..."
He paused, frowning as he tilted his head.
"I don't know how to describe it. You just seemed like a couple."
"Oh, well, no. Definitely not. We're both very anti-relationship, I guess you can say."
"Being in love is scary. Best to play things safe."
My heart pounded. I didn't owe this guy anything, but I still found myself saying, "I'm not in love with him."
"I just got out of a 4-year relationship," Cody said, taking a sip of his gin. "It was the worst heartache I'd ever experienced. I cursed the whole thing after that. It took me a month to feel like I could get out of my apartment. 2 more to look like a human being. Well, basically it took 8 or 9 months for me to be myself again. Guess how long it took her to move on."
"I don't know," I whispered, leaning in slightly.
3 months. I was still trying to be a human being and she was moving on with her boss."
"That sounds awful."
"It was. It still is. I've been trying to move on, but I don't know."
He shrugged.
"I compare people to her all the time."
4 years is a long time."
"I don't regret it, though. Not a single day goes by where I regret being with her those 4 years. I do regret not fighting for her afterward. If I'd told her that I didn't want to split up, maybe we'd still be together. Who knows? The thought was scary back then, but now it seems so stupid."
I swallowed the lump that seemed to be forming in my throat. "Love is terrifying."
"It sure is."
He lifted his glass, I lifted mine, and we toasted to that. We changed the subject back to clothing, which I was thankful for. But in the back of my mind, all I could think about was our previous conversation. Was I in love with Rowan? Really in love with him? Was that why I felt so giddy when he was around and so desperately in need of him when he wasn't? Was that why I checked my phone 100 times, even after I'd turned it off for the night? I said goodbye to Cody and went up to my room, my head buzzing with thoughts of love and alcohol. What was love, anyway? Was it falling into the unknown? I lay in bed the rest of the night and thought about it until I finally decided that I was definitely in love with Rowan Hawthorne. I couldn't even think of a time when I hadn't been. I decided then that I'd tell him. Consequences be damned. He needed to know how I felt. Chapter 36. Tessa. From the moment I walked into the New York high-rise, I knew I wouldn't take the job. Not because it was too busy or too loud or anything that may scare someone else away, but because it felt cold and dry and stifling. I'd never believed creativity had a home outside our minds. It was something you either had or you didn't. No fancy high-rise was going to change that. Yet, as I looked around, waiting for Tracy to call me into her office, I couldn't help but wonder if working there would stifle my creative drive. When my name was called, I gathered my bag, held my portfolio tight, and walked in. I'd already emailed her a copy of the whole thing, but there was something about having a physical thing to show that couldn't be replaced. The secretary signaled for me to go into the office. I let out a breath as I pushed the large stained glass door open. Tracy was unlike everything outside of her office. She was vibrant, wearing a burnt orange dress with frills on the sleeves. Her dyed blonde hair was up in a high ballerina bun, and her smile was warm and welcoming.
"Please, sit,"
she said after shaking my hand firmly. I did and placed the portfolio on the edge of the desk. "I love your dress," I smiled. "The color is a dream."
"Ah, a girl who notices. Most people are too busy looking out the windows to notice what I'm wearing, which quite frankly worries me since this isn't an architectural firm."
Her brows knotted together in a cute pout that made me laugh and feel instantly at ease.
"So, we have a lot to talk about."
And talk we did. About everything from school to when I started drawing, where I learned to sketch, and what it was about design that called to me. I answered all of her questions with sincerity and found that Tracy was the kind of woman I could be friends with, whether or not she hired me. She let me speak and nodded and rose her eyebrows every so often, as if impressed or interested, encouraging me to keep talking. I told her about Monty Fabrics and my internship at Hawthorne.
"I'll have to look them up," she said, "especially if they're getting all that exotic fabric."
"Definitely. They're easy to work with, too, and have the bones of a small company, but the product of an international one."
"Cute."
She smiled and turned the page on my designs.
"So, tell me who our competition is. I know we aren't the only ones who want to steal that brain of yours."
I paused, unsure whether I should actually say.
Did she want to know, or was she just making conversation?
I decided she had better things to do than make conversation, so I told her. "Prim. I have my interview with them on Wednesday."
"Prim?" Her mouth dropped. "In Paris?"
I nodded slowly, wondering if saying it aloud was a mistake.
"Girl, what are you doing here?" she asked. "I'm serious. I mean, I want you. Fuck, I'll hire you and start the paperwork right now, but Prim.
They have the most exclusive apprenticeship program there is.
Trust me, I got turned down 3 times.
My heart skittered. "Really? You?"
"Really. Don't get me wrong, everything happens for a reason. I see that now, but damn."
She shook her head, mouth still open slightly.
"You need to take that apprenticeship. What's stopping you? Family, it sounds like you're ready to start a life somewhere."
"I am. I mean, I don't know what's stopping me." It was the truth. My siblings had managed to move on and start their lives without a second thought. I wasn't sure why I was so hesitant to do the same.
"Tell you what," Tracy said. "You go and take that apprenticeship in Paris. If you decide you hate it and want to come home, you call me, and I'll find a spot for you here."
"You'd do that?" She smiled.
"It's cute that you think I'm the one doing you a favor and not the other way around."
As soon as I left, I called Celia. She laughed and laughed and laughed.
"Oh my God, Tess, that's huge."
"I guess, I mean, right? I couldn't even speak. "I'm still shaking." She laughed again. I knew it. I knew they'd want you.
"So, Paris?"
"I have to go over there and interview anyway, right?"
"Tessa," she said, her tone suddenly firm and serious.
"You are interviewing them. Don't you get it? You are interviewing them. Let that sink in for a moment."
"I'll wait."
I did let it sink in, and it was unreal. I shook my head. No way. I knew I was good. Not that a billion others weren't better than I was, but I knew I had something. I had a drive and love for it that not everyone had.
And that was the drive and the something that was making Rowan push me off the cliff without attempting to wait for me at the bottom of it. Chapter 37. Tessa. I was sitting in the coffee shop, perfecting the lecture I was going to give Rowan about love, when Samson walked in, his blue tie flying up in the wind as he shut the door. When he spotted me, he frowned and stalked over, looking like a man on a mission. I laughed a little. He'd called me when I was in line getting my coffee and told me not to move until he made it here. And from the looks of it, he seriously needed to talk about something. You look like a disheveled version of James Bond.
Yeah, thanks.
His brows rose as he sat across from me and clapped his hands together.
We need to talk.
Did something happen? I sat up in my seat, bracing myself for health news. He'd been going to doctors lately and running tests, and the mere thought of something being wrong with him sent my heart lurching into my throat.
They're getting married.
Oh. I let out a semi-relieved breath. But my heart stayed put as I looked down at my empty pad. I didn't need to jot down everything I was going to say to Rowan. I decided to do the one thing I never thought I would. I'd cut myself open and let it all spill out. He told me.
No, he said. Like, right now. They're in the courthouse right now, signing the papers in front of witnesses.
What? I blinked up at him, shutting my book with a thump. I stood, coffee forgotten.
It's done, he said. He's decided.
No, I shook my head. He couldn't have just... I mean, he can't. I have to go down there. I ran outside, down the sidewalk and toward my truck.
I'll drive, he said, taking the keys from me. What exactly are you going to go down there for?
Why exactly did you come here to tell me that they were getting married?
Because I felt you should know. You should find out from me, from Ro, not, I don't know, not from other people.
I felt like my heart was being punched repeatedly. I put my hand on it and pushed it in, massaged it like I'd seen people on television do when they were trying to revive someone. I glanced at Sam as we peeled out of the parking spot. Why aren't you there?
I didn't want to partake.
Are both your parents there?
And my grandparents, yeah.
Stupid parents. Stupid grandparents. Stupid fucking Hawthorns. He parked, and we walked into the courthouse. We put our things through the scanner and picked them up on the other side, continuing our quick walk to the marriage certificate area.
Wait here. I'll find out where they are.
I nodded, heart rattling out of control. I felt sweat break out across my forehead and took a deep breath, wiping my face quickly. What would I say?
Would I just barge in there and tell him not to marry her?
Would I tell him I loved him? Would I stay and take the New York offer after all? It was the only way this would work out. If I went to Paris... I massaged my heart again. Oh, God. I couldn't do it. I couldn't tell him. I peeked inside the room and saw all couples sitting in front of the little windows, all there to fill out their certificates, probably preparing for the happiest day of their lives. I pondered leaving, running toward the exit and forgetting the whole thing. Then I remembered Grandma Joan and what she'd said about the importance of speaking our feelings. I kept my feet rooted there. I'd stay. I'd wait. I'd tell him. No matter what happened, I'd tell him. A door down the hall opened, and I picked up my head to look at it. Samson and Rowan strode into the hallway and walked over to me. My gaze locked with Rowan's, and I had my answer before he even made it over to me.
I need to speak to her,
he said without looking to Sam.
Cover for me.
Sam walked away, and Rowan tugged on my hand. I didn't know where he was taking me, but in that moment, as I followed him through the door that led to the stairwell, I knew I'd follow him anywhere. No questions asked. When the door shut behind us, he turned and faced me again. We looked at each other for a moment, my heart beating uncontrollably, itching to get out of its cage. He brought his hand up, the tips of his fingers caressing my face as if to catalog each feature. Rowan,
I whispered. His eyes snapped to mine. He took a step toward me, encasing me in his arms, and crashed his lips onto mine in a desperate kiss that spoke of anguish and goodbyes and made tears prick my eyes. When he broke the kiss, I could merely look at him.
"Please don't do it," I whispered.
"Tess,
I love you."
My voice wavered as I took in the shock in his eyes. My throat ached with the words as I spoke them, but I pushed past the thick emotion that threatened to cut them from coming into fruition. I'd come this far, and I wasn't going to let my fear of being turned away interfere with getting the truth out.
"I'm pretty sure I've always been in love with you, and maybe I should have followed you to Columbia. I should have jumped and pulled you with me and..."
"Tessa..."
His mournful plea broke into my sentence. He squeezed his eyes shut, and when he opened them again, I could see the pain in his gaze. I could feel it. I reached up and ran my shaking fingers over his chest. "I know you're scared, but so am I."
"No, Tessa," he whispered. "You have Paris."
"I don't care about Paris. I care about you."
My words came out broken and felt as choppy as the tears running down my face. "I'm not going to be the reason you stay here. You'll end up resenting me. How can..." He exhaled loudly, shaking his head. "I'm not a lovable person. Don't you see that? Don't you see how miserable your life would be with me? The moment this contract goes through, I'll be on an airplane all the time. There would be little time for you."
"I don't care,"
I sputtered.
"I'll take the New York apprenticeship. I'll drive there every day. I'll..."
"No."
He grabbed my arms, held my gaze.
"You will not give up Paris for me, not for anything."
My lip wobbled. "It isn't your choice to make."
"It is. I want you to go. I need you to go."
"Why are you doing this?"
I pressed my hands on his chest and pushed him back a little. He laced his fingers through mine and brought his forehead to mine, closing his eyes. "Tanakwe,"
he exhaled onto me. I exhaled shakily, a new wave of tears breaking free from my lashes and running down my face.
"This is what must be done."
"I don't want you to do this,"
I whispered against his lips.
We opened our eyes, our foreheads still touching, our fingers still laced together. "You're going to ruin everything."
"But not you, Sprite. I won't ruin you."
"You have ruined me."
"You'll live."
He smiled slightly, but I could see the sadness in his eyes.
"You'll go to Paris and live out your dream, and I'll be here, rooting for you from afar. You'll be the best designer to come out of this town, and I'll be so damn proud to say I had you in my life once."
I shook my head. "No."
"Yes."
He pressed his lips softly against mine. "I'm in love with you, Rowan."
"You can't be, Sprite."
"Stop saying that."
I hiccuped, trying to fight the tears, but they just kept coming.
I was cutting myself open for him, and he wasn't responding the way I wanted him to respond. "I love you."
He brought his hands up to cut my face, brushing my tears with his thumbs. "You terrify me. Don't you see that? You fucking terrify me."
It was the first time I realized that ending up with the person you were in love with was a gift. A gift we wouldn't be given. Even as the thought tore me apart, I grabbed his face and kissed him, hoping to breathe enough of my love into him for him to feel it, wishing it would change his mind. That I would talk him out of it so that we could be together. Really, together. Instead, he broke the kiss slowly and held my face in his.
"Fly, little Sprite. Flap those beautiful, magical wings and fly."
He let go. The door rattled with his exit, and I was unable to make myself move. He'd left me with my chest ripped open and my heart in my hands.
Chapter 38. Rowan. "Dude, she told you she loves you," my brother said beside me. I'd left Tessa in the stairwell and made my way to the men's bathroom, which was where he had found me, with my face buried into my hands like I was breathing into a paper bag. She'd opened herself to me so completely, and I turned my back on her. I wanted to give in to the rage that flowed through my veins. I wanted to punch something and take my anger out on the world. Instead, I waited. I calmed myself. I tried to summon all the words my